Welcome to the Sigmund Cinema Podcast, where all things movie related are broken down, discussed, put back together, and discussed some more. Here's your host, Sigmund.
Welcome back to the podcast. Glad that you've decided to join us. And today we have another special guest. And I will let her introduce herself and what she does. Go ahead, Miss Edith.
Yes, I am Edith Match, and I make independent films. I write, direct, produce, perform in, edit, music, costumes, everything you see. I made it, and I've been in the independent side of the business for about 20 years.
Excellent. And we'll be getting into all of the things you do. Actually, in case people want to follow along, give your Instagram for the people, because there's some interesting stuff on there you all can look as we talk.
Edith was here, and it's got dots in between. Edith dot was dot here, because I'm obnoxious and I wanted to drag it out more.
Oh no, that's all good. You gotta stand out. So man, like I said, as people will see when they look on your Instagram, and they'll go to your YouTube, we'll replug everything down the line. You basically are, for lack of a better phrase, a Jill of all trades, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I have trouble sitting still, so I'm always learning a new skill. I started when I was a teenager in theater, and it just went from there, learning everything about that.
Sweet. Where did you start? Acting or behind the scenes?
Yes, I started acting. I think they took one look at me and thought, oh, she needs to be on stage. She's too nervous to handle the lights, because I was really shy. And that's something that brought me out of my shell, to be on stage in front of people. So yeah, I was 17, and I had already made my own like Super 8 films. I don't know anyone who hasn't of my generation and back that didn't make their own Super 8 films when they were,
you know. True enough, my grandmother had a Super 8 camera, and didn't know what I was doing, but I figured it out.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the best way to learn for me, is to just get in the trenches and figure it out as you do it. Because if I have to sit there and I have to listen to a lecture, I will tune out. I learn better doing the thing rather than observing it.
Excellent. Yeah, I agree. That's definitely experience is the best teacher, right?
Mm-hmm. Even if you screw up, at least, you know, you learn not to do it again.
Right. True enough. One of my favorite sayings, you know, you fall down 7 times, get up 8.
Mm-hmm.
And all right, so you started out in a theater. That's probably other than watching theater, the only experience I haven't had, the only theater experience I have is high school scenic design.
Well, that's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it was. It was interesting. Learning what stage left is from the different point of view. But so now that we know that, I was wasn't gonna start off with this, but since today is Charlie Chaplin's birthday. I wanted to ask you about your interest in silent films. It seems a lot of your videos are based around...
Yeah. There is a certain period of film between the teens and the 30s with sound, pre-code.
Yeah.
That I am interested in. And that started with Buster Keaton. And I love Chaplin as well. And he made some amazing sound films, not just silent.
But it's true enough.
Yeah, The Great Dictator is one of the best films ever made, and so very relevant. But
yeah, that's crazy. One of the greatest speeches in probably film history.
Yes, more people need to know about that film.
They do.
But yeah, Buster Keaton. It started with the movie Sherlock Jr., and I was, I don't know, 14. And that was the first time I had seen someone for lack of a better term, look like me. I had never seen anyone outside of, honestly, a horror film being a vampire or something that looked similar to me. And I thought, you know, you deny people a reflection of themselves and they go mad. And it was very difficult to find media representation. Yes. And then I find something from, you know, the 1920s. So I was obsessed. And it completely changed the trajectory of where I was going. Who knows where it was, but that's what started it.
So is Sherlock Jr., is your, that's what introduced you? Is it, is it also your favorite from Keaton?
Having a favorite of Keaton is kind of impossible for me, because I've seen them all so many times, but I would say Sherlock Jr. is the technical achievement.
There we go.
So many special effects were, if they weren't invented, they were perfected, you know, within that film. So it has a special place because it was the first one I saw of him.
That makes sense. I know for all of you kiddies listening under a certain age, we'll try to bring you back in something a little more interesting. But actually, for people who are your cinephiles and all that, I noticed on social media, even the hardcore cinephiles, they seem to be stuck in a certain generation. Like, they'll start, for example, I know one person who only watches films 1975 and after.
Yeah, a lot of that. They tend to prefer, I guess, movies after the studio system was gone.
Yeah.
You know, in the way that we know it. Those are rebel films. They invented cinema as we know it now.
It's true enough. And another thing about, I'm glad you said that. It's, you got Buster Keaton. He was on what I call a grand slam, a grand slammer of a filmmaker. He was an actor, director, producer, screenwriter, and me being into martial arts and action movies, he was a stunt, basically a stuntman.
Yeah, he did all of his own stunts within his silent films, except one, I believe. He couldn't pole vault, no matter how hard he tried. So that's the only one. And if you watch that and you see him land on his neck and slide several feet, you realize that's him doing that.
Yeah, and like you said, we were talking about, you know, learning from the mistakes. You said he tried, and most people wouldn't.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know,
he's been doing it since a child, so that helped. You know, when you're a child, you're basically made out of jello. You can do anything. So that helped.
Oh, true enough. And you realize without Buster Keaton, Buster has inspired. Without Buster, there's no Jackie Chan.
That's true. Absolutely.
You know,
Jackie Chan is hugely influenced by Buster.
Of course, he said his two biggest inspiration is Bruce Lee, the obvious martial arts, and Buster Keaton for the, you know, the physical comedy, the stunts, and the prop comedy.
Yeah, and just the absurdity of how large his stunts get are in keeping with Keaton. It's not good enough to just fall down.
Right.
You know, you have to fall down in the most epic, complicated way possible.
True enough. But, and like I was addressing the kiddos listening to this show who may or may not be listening, and I want you to chime in on this, of course, Edith. In my opinion, I think if somebody didn't know who Buster Keaton was, the film I would start them off on would be The General.
Yeah, a lot. That's a really good one. It was one of the first big budget comedies. You know, we see those all the time now, but then, no.
Yeah, that's
it was the first epic comedy ever.
And even if the movie is, I didn't look up the availability of the movie, but I wouldn't be surprised the whole thing is on YouTube in its entirety.
I think it is, because I believe it's public domain.
Yeah, that
many of his films are public domain now. The scores aren't, but the visuals are.
That's true. Yeah, it's yeah, that's funny you mentioned that. For a lot of years, they were just lost, if I'm not correct, right?
Yeah. His house in California, he left all of his old movies there in the basement when he and his wife divorced. And after James Mason from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea moved into that house later and found all the films. So we can thank James Mason for finding them and knowing what they are.
Right. That is nuts. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. Imagine if that was just not found, you know?
Mm-hmm. If it was all lost.
Yeah, that's just... But yeah, the general definitely is... You know, we're going to get into something. If that movie were made today, it'll be all computers and CG.
Oh, yeah. They would never get a full-size train and crash it off of a bridge into a river. They would never do that now.
And speaking of which, Edith, I don't know if you're familiar with this. I reminded myself, I say Jackie Chan was inspired by Buster, right? Mm-hmm. There's a movie Jackie Chan did with Owen Wilson called Shanghai Noon.
Yes, I'm aware of this film.
There's a deleted sequence where Jackie Chan is trying to stop, guess what?
A train?
A runaway train.
Yeah.
It was an expensive sequence, but unfortunately it was deleted because it pacing reason. It's a great sequence, but it stopped the flow of the movie a little bit. Mm-hmm. But YouTube this deleted train scene from Shanghai, and if this basically Buster Keaton directed the damn thing, it's so mm-hmm. if you're familiar. But
yeah, I haven't seen that scene, so I have to look it up. But
oh yeah, I'll definitely send you all a link if you want to mm-hmm. check it. But so Buster Keaton's definitely a big influence to you.
The biggest, absolutely. I wouldn't have picked up a camera or done any of those things if not for seeing someone I could identify with like that.
Sweet. And also, I wanted to ask you about, you say pick up a camera, and everybody will, don't worry, we'll plug Edith's videos and stuff and her Instagram, which we did. And you can look at her photography and her films. And so when did you realize that you had to do everything?
I realized I had to do everything when everyone started bailing on me. And that's how it is in independent film anyway. People have mm-hmm. other jobs. They have their own schedules. You're adults. You have responsibilities. So the older everyone gets, the less likely they could show up anywhere at any time and do something. So I thought, well, okay, the lighting, no one can help me with lighting, so I'll learn how to do that. No one can help me run the camera, I'll learn how to do that. So, you know, you just end up doing it all yourself. You want to do it so badly, and you don't want to sit around and wait for somebody. So
there we go. And it's interesting, the contrast between my last episode, I had a young lady, a filmmaker also, but she's blessed enough to have an entire crew around her.
Yes, that is blessed.
She works with no less than 10 people, and she is an independent filmmaker.
Yeah.
And but then we have you know, one of my favorite filmmakers, and I would call him underrated, even though he has a few big budget movies. Robert Rodriguez.
Yes. Yeah, he's definitely a DIY guerrilla filmmaker. Yeah.
He has a great book. I bought his book for anybody I know who likes to read and love filmmaking. It's called Rebel Without a Crew.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't read this book, it's like $12 on Amazon. Definitely get it.
I'll look into it. Yeah, I've not read it, but I am familiar with his ability to make something out of nothing, you know.
Yeah.
And that is a really good trait to have.
Yeah, definitely. And I love this dude, Robert Rodriguez. He, like, I'm into movie collecting, and his DVDs are now Blu-rays. He does commentary. Not only that, he does extensive behind the scenes feature, and he does cooking school, filmmaker school, and he loves the craft. He wants people to share. He wants people to do, you know what I'm saying?
Well, no, that's important. And so many people, especially now online when everyone's so competitive with each other, they don't want to share their secrets anymore.
Yeah, that's just amazing.
They don't want to help other people. It's like the way magicians used to be. They just won't share it.
It's true, yeah.
But the art form will die out if you don't do that.
That's true enough. And and like you said, it's just the competitiveness is just, like you said, if the art form dies out, you don't have anybody to compete against. You just got all these great trade secrets.
Mm-hmm.
But
people don't share enough. They share plenty of their personal life, but they don't share enough on how they create the things that they do. It's like, it's just magic. They're just awesome. And that's not good enough for me.
And You know what? I think this is kind of a, I won't say what you've done with one of your character inspirations, but I will describe one of your last videos was the Buster Keaton, you know, the wash your hands video.
Yeah.
Take us through your creative process, like beginning to end. How long did it take to make that? What was the process?
I did that all in one take.
Ooh.
So this one's a little unfair because I have been working on that character since I was a teenager. So it's very easy for me to slip into that, do the thing, and then be done. So yeah, that's all one take. I just, you know, put the intertitles in there in the text. So I did that, and however long the video is, a minute.
There we go. Yeah, and it's, and even at 1 minute, you can see the work that went into your performance, of course, and then just the, you know, everything you did, you know, with the titles and the music and yeah, and I guess people will assume that it's easy to.
It's not.
Especially when you're doing everything yourself, and
yeah,
and another thing I was about to say specifically, people assume that it's easy to act with expressions only.
They do,
and you know, I'm not a in front of the camera type of guy. I'll shoot something with a camera, not a gun, and you know, put a fight scene together, but yeah, I just don't think I'm a good actor, and I'm okay with that. But yeah, you got so many great actors who can just, you know, look a certain way and get an Academy Award nomination.
Yeah, well, it helps to have lobbying by producers on your part.
Yeah.
Too.
Well, yeah, that too.
That helps a lot.
Like, you in every scene in a movie, how did you get a Best Supporting Actor nomination? But
yeah,
but yeah. So one thing I definitely wanted to touch on that you also do, and I wanted to use a speech as a segue.
Okay.
If I have it here, which I don't.
Make something up. Just make something up.
No. But where was I at? No, I got it right here. Basically, so the great Rick Baker, makeup effects artist.
Oh, yes.
If I'm not mistaken, 7-time Academy Award winner.
I would not doubt it. They invented a category just for him.
Exactly. So. American Werewolf in London was the movie. He won his first Oscar, and it was the first category, the first time they had a category, and deservingly so. But Rick Baker recently retired, and he said, you know, quoting, I'm 64 years old, and now I'm in the business. Everybody wants cheap and fast.
Yeah.
And he retired. The last movie he did was Maleficent with Angelina Jolie.
Yeah.
And I read he said it was one of his most horrible experiences.
Well, I would doubt it.
He said he just had...
Working for a big corporation like that and wants a quick turnover.
You have a legend like Rick Baker, and he's getting treated like some new guy to the game, and he said he just killed his passion right then and there.
Yeah.
But that segue, I wanted to go into what do you think the state of special makeup effects is in the movies when it comes to that, and people going the CGI route with everything nowadays?
Well, it's awful. I think that's the best way to say it. The brain can tell. You know, your mind can tell when you see something that is completely false. Now, that doesn't mean you can't go with it and watch the movie and still enjoy it. Motion capture performances are still really good. But it has to be extraordinarily good, and most of it isn't. Most of it, a bad CG can ruin a really good film.
Yeah, and like you said, the... if I could elaborate on something you said the eye can tell. It's something doesn't have to be for what we refer to as phony for us to not know that something's not right.
Yeah.
And a lot of movies do that.
It's just, it's that, you know, that uncanny valley thing where you know it's not real and it's unsettling and it takes you out of the film experience. And I think most movies these days do take you out of the experience. Rather, it's trying to get your attention in short bursts throughout the film rather than pull you in and keep you there.
Right.
And as far as CGI makeup, sometimes it's good, but it would always be better if it was actual appliances there on set, because even if it looks good to the audience, it's not going to look good to the other actors. And no matter how good an actor you are, somebody with dots all over their face is very hard to interact with.
That's true.
In any meaningful way.
And one of the, I guess, examples, if you wanted to use one, so it's two movies which actually related. There's a movie called John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh, yes. Rob Bottin did those effects, and they are brilliant.
Rob Bottin. And the year that movie came out was 82, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure.
And
I'm going to assume it's 82 as well.
And I forget which year the category for makeup was invented, but I'll tell you one category that did. Okay, so that was American Werewolf in London was 1981. So that's a year before The Thing.
Yeah.
So The Thing should have been the second movie to win Best Makeup.
Yeah.
Or Best Visual Effects, for which it was nominated for neither one.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just one of the biggest travesties. And so the second film is actually the prequel, The Thing, from 2011. So everybody was like, oh, don't use CG. So actually, every scene that had the creature was practical.
Yeah.
But then the director decided in post-production to put CG over everything.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense, because I was about to say, why didn't it look better than it did?
Yeah, and not just to spruce it up a bit to make it look a little cleaner, but just every ounce of practical thing that was created was just done away with CG. They just
why did
put
they do that? Did it not film well?
Well, no, there's actually footage out there, and even behind the scenes footage looks great of the practical makeup, but the director just out of the blue decided that he thought it would look better.
Yeah.
And if you've seen the movie, the prequel.
Yes, I have.
It really takes you out of it.
Yeah.
And because,
no,
like you
that
said,
movie was a disappointment. It absolutely was.
It really was. And you know, as a filmmaker, there's something with CG, especially in the manner that they did it for that movie, where they didn't know the CG was going to be there, so they didn't have lighting references, and things weren't lit a certain way, and you can see it's like a cartoon. Yeah, it's not, for lack of a better word, matching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like it was added in.
Yeah, and that's very disappointing, and we'll never see the practical version, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a shame, because as I said, I've only seen the CGI, and it was just atrocious. It's just terrible. And I thought, well, okay, why not? You know, why would anyone leave that and be like, this movie is finished. This movie is perfect now. Please show it to thousands of people.
Yeah, it's crazy. And unfortunately, you know, it's what people expect. But yeah, we could talk about that. Yes, unfortunately, one of the greatest makeup effects artists was chased out of the business. And
yeah. Well, you know, when I was quite young, the first time I did any special effects makeup, there is a book which is extraordinarily hard to get a hold of now. I wish I'd stolen it from the library if I had known that I'd never be able to get it again. But it's Dick Smith's Do-It-Yourself Monster Makeup. Now, Rick Baker was a protege of Dick Smith. Dick Smith was responsible for The Exorcist. Many of the best makeup, special effects makeup jobs you've seen, 70s and back, was Dick Smith.
Yeah, I do. Familiar with him. Yes.
Yeah, definitely look him up. Whoever's listening, look him up, because he brought makeup to the masses as well. He didn't hide his secrets either. And it's sad to see those things going away. But at the same time, I do see people making films and saying all the effects are practical, but the movie's still terrible. you know, so you have to have, it has to be good in every way. You can't just, you know, hire a good special effects artist and make a terrible movie to go around it, which is what I see a lot of.
It's true enough.
I'm not going to mention any names, but I do see a lot of that. And it's very disappointing to see such talented artists being a part of such awful, awful films.
Yeah, that is extremely, extremely disappointing. And mm-hmm. And while you mentioned Dick Smith,
mm-hmm.
and you mentioned Rob Bottin.
Yes, Rob Bottin.
And a lot of people, you might not know him by name, but whoa, he's here. No, just kidding. A little. I don't know if you all heard that notification. Was that me?
I didn't have a notification, so it must have been you.
Need that. The pizza guy is here. But anywho. No, Rob Bottin, you might not know the name, people, but I'll throw out a couple of movies he's done. RoboCop, that was Rob Bottin. And he won an Academy Award for Total Recall, the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he did one of the best, worked on one of my favorite movies of all time, Legend.
Yes.
With Tom Cruise, and of course he did the Darkness, which was played by Tim Curry, the great
Tim
Curry.
Which is one of the best makeup jobs I have ever seen.
And I don't know what Legend lost to, but I can't imagine anything that looked better than that.
Now, unless he lost to Rick Baker for something, then it was a bad decision.
Oh, you know what, Edith? Mm. I think that's the year Rick Baker won for what he said was personally his favorite movie to work on, Harry and the Hendersons.
Oh, all right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, he personally said, I'm sorry. That's not true. The Fly.
Ah, oh, Cronenberg. Okay.
Yeah, The Fly won Best Makeup that year.
Nice.
Okay.
I can see why. That was amazing.
Yeah, I give it to The Fly. Oh, man. But, yeah, so the state of makeup is basically crap.
It is. It is. And I wish more performers knew how to do their own makeup. That is something that has been lost.
That's a theater thing. Right.
That's a theater thing. But people like, you know, Lon Chaney Sr., they did their own makeup. And I think it would be an invaluable tool to performers to learn how to do their own. And I don't mean just, you know, so they don't look shiny on camera and covering flaws. I mean to transform into someone else. It's one thing to sit there and have somebody put makeup on you and then you wake up from your nap because it took 3 hours and then you go and perform. It's quite another to do it yourself and watch yourself transform. And it's a shame that more performers don't know how to do that these days. There are too many hands in the movies now. I think there's just hundreds of people that work on it. Everyone has a job, so that's how it works out. But
sweet. All right, so that's not it, but with the makeup, I also wanted to cover a few other topics that I'm curious about your opinion. But first, a little word from our sponsor.
Oh, okay.
Oh, man. But yeah, we were just got off of talking about the makeup effects. But now I wanted to cover filmmaking as a whole, as far as the filmmaking process. So, and what I mean by that is, you said you've been doing your independent filmmaking for about 20 years. Or
yeah, off and on, yeah.
Off and on into it some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask them, just throw all this on you, how do you feel about the women in filmmaking today? How do you think, like, for example, there's only ever been one woman woman to win Best Director.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that just a disgrace?
No, it's horrible.
There's just no words for how that even happens.
And we were speaking about this. I was speaking about this with my previous guest. This past Academy Awards, there was multiple controversies, but one of them was the numerous female filmmakers that were overlooked for the Best Director category.
Yeah, they were in Best Picture, but it's if you're going to give them Best Picture, you might want to give them a Best Director nomination too. But yeah, it was a disgrace. Mm-hmm. But many times over the years, award seasons are disappointing for whatever reason. And even smaller scale independent festivals are disappointing. And I don't know if it has to do with sponsors or producers or just personal preference. But I think women are excluded much too often. It's too easy. It's too easy for them to exclude them. And I wish we would yell a little louder about it, I guess.
Yes.
It's hard to, because you don't want to lose your job. You don't want to lose the ability to continue to make films. But at the same time, I know if no male directors were nominated, they would certainly say something.
Yeah, a huge outcry.
They would say something and they wouldn't stop until it was fixed. And I wish the ability was there. And I don't just mean personal ability. I mean to be able to do it without repercussions, negative repercussions.
Right.
To shout louder and be seen and heard.
Definitely. And it's, unfortunately, you know, it's the thing about the opportunities. Like if there's a script floating around, there's an automatic shortlist of directors who aren't female, but yet we have the filmmaker, the director I mentioned, who's the only female director to win best director in Oscar, is Catherine Bigelow.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were to ask somebody, everybody knows Point Break, Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze, right?
Yeah.
But I bet you those same people don't know that a woman, Catherine Bigelow, directed that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, they don't promote that as well. It's almost like, don't tell people a woman made it.
It's almost.
Unless it's about women, don't tell people. Which is ridiculous. Men make movies about women all the time, and it's fine.
It's so, true enough.
I don't get it.
Yeah, and people, and don't think, you know, people listening, don't think it's nothing to do with any type of agenda. It's about fairness. You know, and there's a lot of talented filmmakers out there that's just female filmmakers that aren't getting looked at. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And they have the credentials, or not credentials, but the background, the filmography to back it up.
Yeah, and they're just excluded. Well, you know, I don't think there's an agenda on the part of women. Although you would think there were, considering all the news articles I see about people being outraged that a woman did anything. But there is an agenda behind a lot of major studios. And I don't know that it's there as heavily misogynistic as they're thinking money. Bottom line, people don't like women. You can't put a woman at the helm. And if it's unsuccessful, you can't hire another woman, because apparently all of us women are connected by a string. And we all do pretty much the same thing. So usually if a woman is fired, it's because, oh, women can't do this, so we'll hire a man. And that needs to go away. It needs to be okay to replace a woman with another woman. And that's something I don't see very often. One woman has an unsuccessful film, and we all are unsuccessful at this point. So that is definitely an agenda, and it needs to go away. It's very outdated. Women have been directing movies since movies existed, but usually under different names. It's not like men.
Right, a pseudonym.
That needs to stop. It needed to stop 50 years ago.
That's true, and it's I hate to describe it like this, but you look and you see, as far as female directors go, it's crawling along, but I don't see any better way to describe it, because 2020 it should be. But you mentioned something, I believe it was off mic, I wanted to bring up. You also did music or music scores.
Yes. Now, this is something I'm fairly new to. I play theremin, which is an instrument no one's ever heard of. I do play that. I play a little bit of piano, and I play guitar terribly. But I have been working. Some of my films have elements of a score that I've created. But this one that's coming up is 90% my score. Copyright is bonkers online. Even if you're not monetized, if you're not asking for money, you're not sponsored, you still get in trouble. Using someone else's song. And I would understand that if I were making money off of it, but I'm not. So that's very frustrating.
Yeah, even in a little...
Yeah, just a little niche that I have here.
Little clip.
You know, you have big record companies yelling at you, and it's like, why can't I get this attention from you for something good?
Right.
So it's another one of those necessities. I don't have someone here to make music for me, so I'm going to do it myself. I don't have someone to do special effects, so I'm going to do it myself. You become the entire cast and crew. And
you
having time for it isn't easy, but the drive is there. So if the drive is there, you make time for it when you can.
And there are, right, there are places for... you know, hard workers like yourself within the big industry. Like, for example, and it pays off sometime. There was I think it was the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Mm-hmm. And there's, I forget the person's name, but I know this person won 4 Academy Awards across 3 different categories.
What was it for music?
Same person. It was makeup, visual effects, and art direction.
Mm-hmm.
It's something like that. So one person won those 3 Oscars for these categories. I'm like, But yes, it's definitely something. But when this thing ends, this pandemic. Hopefully the studios and Hollywood will be looking to hire people who are qualified for the job.
Yeah, and I think they need to be a little more sustainable, because clearly they've crumbled.
Yeah.
They were not prepared. So they're not... The big movie industry, Hollywood, isn't prepared for this. And I think this is a good lesson for them to be sustainable. We're going into another possibly economic depression.
Yeah.
One that we haven't seen since the 30s. Now, they still made movies in the 30s. They were still able to do those things. You could say there wasn't a pandemic. Well, there was in 1918, and they made movies then, too.
That's true, it's not
impossible to get things done. It's not impossible to create and release things and still do it safely. But they don't have that attitude or that ability anymore. And I think it's too big as a business to troubleshoot.
And I'm glad you mentioned that. You, I believe it was off mic, going back to your inspiration of Buster Keaton. Hey, he survived that 1918 pandemic and became one of the best damn entertainers ever.
He did. You know, he was making movies at the time with Fatty Arbuckle. Chaplin was making movies at the time. Mabel Normand, all of those people, all of those silent greats were making films. And they survived it. And they were out there in the middle of nowhere at a former chicken farm in California.
Right.
So if they can do it, we can too.
And you know what's, you mentioned these studios and a lot of Hollywood wasn't prepared for this. And fortunately, it could be, depends on which view you're looking at it from, but imagine how, from a business perspective, not what the situation is, but imagine how happy streaming companies are right now.
I know. They are swimming around in gold pieces like Scrooge McDuck at this point.
Right. And, you know, and some movie studios are like releasing what would have been theatrical movies through in-house streaming, but still 90% of people are at home looking at
Netflix. The perfect way to get people to see your film. They literally can't do anything else but watch your movie at this point.
But then one of the bigger releases since this pandemic started, one of is the Trolls 2 animated movie.
Yes, I've been hearing about that.
Made $50 million over streaming. Mm-hmm. It was originally supposed to be theatrical, and that brings in the question about movie theaters now.
Yeah.
Like, man, what would it be like, you know, since I guess movies were around, or if it's theater, there's been some form of theater, be it movies or live performance. What if that goes away?
Yeah. That's a tough call. I know less people were going to movies anyway because of the expense. I understand the expense, but less people were able to go. They do need an overhaul. What they need to do, I'm not sure. But I think the very large cineplexes are a bit much.
Yeah.
In many places. You have 14 movies screening in one place. It's very expensive. It's difficult to run. So it doesn't make as much money as, say, you know, back when I was a child in the 1700s. And you would have just a duplex. They would show one or two movies and that's it. And I think that would help. Smaller theaters, and it would be less likely to have someone in front of you with their cell phone open and a child crying.
Right.
And it's so chaotic. So it's not sustainable, as I was saying. These aren't sustainable things. They could use an overhaul.
Definitely, the whole business structure.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's nuts. And like you and I are. We're around the same. Well, we're basically the same age, but you know, I remember that too. There's something about, I don't know, it's something about just those theaters. They had one screen or just even two screens. Some more intimate. That's the word I'm looking for.
And it felt, I guess, more special. I mean, there was a point where people would actually get dressed up to go see a movie. It was a big deal.
Oh yeah. You had it's called the Road Shot Road Show. Yeah, movies would travel on a road show, and it would be an event. You have programs, and like you said, people would get dressed up.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it was a big deal. It wasn't, you know, I'll show up in my pajamas, maybe.
Right.
With my cell phone.
And you know, I'm glad for, there's people out there that don't like this particular filmmaker, but he brought a piece of history back a couple of years ago with Quentin Tarantino is who I'm talking about. He brought back for one movie the road show experience. He with The Hateful Eight.
Yes. Okay.
He brought back first and foremost a dead technology in the 70mm film, and he actually presented the movie in a road show format, the road show style. The movie had programs, and you know there was an intermission. When's the last time you've been to a movie that had an intermission?
Been a long time,
you know, when you're in your adult life. But yeah, it's a lot of stuff. This business structure, you know, it really doesn't make any sense, like you said, doing 20 screens in a movie theater when there's only 7 movies.
and there's so many people, and it is off-putting, especially when you have a pandemic around. That's something else you need to think about.
Yeah,
that there could be 100 people in the Cineplex, and that's not the kind of world we live in anymore, you know.
It's gonna hopefully, you know, go old school again. And you know, I don't know if you remember this, Edith, and everybody, Edith and I are of an age where when we were younger, when we were kiddos, you could stay and watch a movie again.
Yes, you could stay. You could show up in the afternoon and watch it all day.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Oh, they will kick you out.
Yeah, they'll kick you out. It's about that money.
They will cut off the credits and just say leave.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm glad you brought that up. And I'm going to end it on this one. People, you pay for a movie. The credits are part of the runtime. The credits are part of the movie.
I know.
All right. Years ago, I got into it with security. because a friend of mine who just graduated college and he got a job as a key grip in a movie, I wanted to stay and see his name, and they tried to kick me out.
Oh, yeah.
And the manager gave me, you know, my parents got involved and they got some other people. And yeah, they gave we got an apology and a lot of movie passes for that.
I'm glad. Yes, that's how it should work out.
Yeah. But yeah, just that little factor. I don't know how important it would be to you, but the credits are part of the movie. It's included in the runtime.
You know, all those names there you see are the reason the movie exists.
Exactly.
So hardworking important. People. Yeah, it's very important.
Yes. But no, definitely. Obviously, we could sit here and talk all day, and because of that, we definitely have to get you back on and talk about other hard topics. But definitely appreciate you coming on. Why don't you go ahead for the people and plug all of your social media and everything you want them to go check out?
I have two social media accounts. I have an Instagram, Edith Was Here, and I have a YouTube channel, which is also cleverly titled Edith Was Here. So that has independent films and also performance art, where not only do I create the scene and perform the character, I show you how I created the character in the first place. So you see the makeup and all of that as well. So please go watch them.
And that's and remember, that's Edith dot was dot here, right?
Yes, that's me. Don't forget the dots. I don't know where you'll end up if you forget the dots.
Right. And definitely check out and subscribe to her YouTube page. Same thing, Edith Was Here.
Yep.
And once again, I definitely appreciate you coming on to the show.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
Oh, I hope you enjoyed it. And we would definitely love to have you back. And to everybody else, be safe. If you don't have to go out, stay at home. And stay
There's
away.
There's a wonderful PSA.
Yes. And I will post it on my Instagram, Sigma Cinema Instagram. And yeah, so be safe, be excellent, and until next time, everybody.